What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 151 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Monday evening. Nothing's really happening still, and basically the entire hot stove has been cooled completely in the last week or two, even more so than before that. But we do have a nice central topic to talk about on this podcast, and joining me as often, the great Eric Cole. What's up, man?
Hey, man, how's it going? These Atlanta Hawks seem to be doing some stuff.
Yeah, it's Monday night. I'm recording right after a Hawks win, and it's not my day job. I would say in order of my time commitments in life, number one is my day job. Number two is the Hawks. Number three is probably the general NBA, and then the Braves. I do love the Braves and have covered the Braves for a while, but time commitment wise, I spend a lot more time on Hawks because I run a website and do a podcast and all that fun stuff, and it's been busy in that particular neck of the woods. But the Braves have been quiet, and they're not alone. I think some fans have kind of talked themselves into the Braves being the only team that's not doing anything, which is kind of hilarious because no one's doing anything, at least for the last little while here. There is a little bit of news. I want to talk to you about prospects. That's like sort of the biggest part of this podcast because you are the prospect guru, Eric. That's what I call you.
it's a very grandiose term for what I am, but sure.
It's absolutely what you are. But before we get to that, I guess we have to update people on the, I mean, it's been a while, like a week and a half since we did a podcast. I guess the biggest quote unquote, and I'm kind of using massive scare quotes on that, the biggest thing is that there was a little bit of buzz about Craig Kimbrell and the Braves over the last week or so. I would call it pseudo buzz, not really like full fledged rumors, but you know, John Heyman referenced the Braves as a team that could be quote lying in the weeds end quote for Kimbrell. And of all of the big name free agents, which is basically Kimbrell, Machado, and Bryce Harper, I think Kimbrell is the most likely to come to the Braves. So what did you make of that little inkling that was out there from Heyman and others? And is this something that you would be on board with? I think obviously the price is coming down a little bit considering how late it is in the winter. But is there a price point where you would be on board with Kimbrell?
Well, I guess I'll start by saying that anything that John Heyman says, I kind of take with a little bit of salt because
Scott Boras clients especially.
Yeah, if it's a Scott Boras client especially, you know, it's pretty clear that Heyman's primary source on that is Scott Boras, and the information that he's putting out there, he's being told to put out there, which is kind of a shame because honestly, for a long time, Heyman was actually a really good reporter, but now it's just kind of, it is what it is. That said, I don't think it's a crazy notion that Kimbrell could come back for the Braves. It's kind of, you know, I say unfortunate, it's unfortunate for Kimbrell, but I'm sure he was thinking that he could get a 5 or 6 year deal and one of those big reliever deals and the last big deal he's probably going to get, this off season. But teams are kind of figuring out that as relievers get older, there's diminishing returns and it can come pretty quickly. So they're not going to sign relievers even as good as Kimbrell has been for the last forever. He's not going to get that, you know, 5 year, $100 million deal or something close like that. You know, it's just not going to happen. So it comes down to what kind of fit that is. And one, obviously Kimbrell's been a Brave before, so he's familiar with the organization. And I've always kind of been suspicious of, I mean, obviously if there's a guy like a Kluber or, you know, a big time front of the rotation arm, then the Braves should absolutely explore trades for that. But I never understood that this like stated need of adding a starting rotation, like a member to the starting rotation, unless you're like really desperate to replace Julio Teheran with another veteran, because you have so many starting pitching prospects that either already have time in the major leagues or are basically ready now, even if they haven't had much time, that I never really understood the need to get a starting pitcher, but there is a need in the bullpen to have kind of a reliable, when in doubt, when things are going wrong, you can bring this guy out and, you know, and they will take care of business. And Kimbrell fits that mold. Obviously, he had a little bit of some ups and downs in the playoffs this year, but I mean, it's hard to argue with his track record of the last several years. I'm definitely interested maybe on a shorter deal, like I would even probably go as high as maybe 3 years or so. But again, giving a reliever $20 million a year is probably not going to work. I just don't think that Kimbrell's going to get that. So there's definitely some price points that I think are feasible that would also make me interested in having him aboard, because again, he's kind of one of those pieces where, you know, at the back end of the bullpen, it's one less thing you have to worry about. And with so many other kind of starting pitchers that you guys probably have to move to the bullpen now at this point, that, you know, you might be able to, like, you know, manage his workload a bit. You have AJ Minter, you have this guy, you know, in the fold already, that, you know, he doesn't have to save every game, but he's a guy that you can bring in, you know, and he will be a reliable part of the bullpen. So is there a price point? Yes. I guess some maybe some sort of 3-year, maybe 15 a year, maybe I'd be okay with. I don't know. I'd have to kind of think about it, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's less than he was supposed to get, obviously, which kind of opens the door. We've kind of, I think all three of us, you know, talking about you, Scott, and I have been kind of all skeptical of a big money deal for a reliever the entire offseason. With that said, I mean, Kimbrel is, of course, the best guy available. And if the market really is drying up so badly that he just wants some security, then that kind of makes some sense. But there, I guess with all these guys, there's, I guess, there's the looming possibility of a 1-year, like, balloon payment kind of deal, like the one that Donaldson signed. I wouldn't bet on that. But you know, Kimbrel is very good. I will say, for me, my guard is up a little bit. You know, 2 of the last 3 years, he's been kind of ordinary. Like, still good, but not exceptional. 2016, he had a 3.40 ERA, which is not bad by any means, but not dominant at all. Actually walked 5 guys per 9 innings. Last season, 2018, he walked 4.48 per 9 and had a 274 ERA despite a really low BABIP and a lot of home runs. Again, you're still talking about a great pitcher. He's still very, very good, very, very valuable. But of the last 3 years, the only year that you would like want to be paying a guy $20 million is for 2017 when he was absolutely awesome. 16.43 strikeouts per 9, 1.83 walks. That's ridiculous. A 1.43 ERA. If that guy exists, then obviously he's worth $20 million. But if the other guy, if it's the guy from 2016 and 2018, you don't want to be paying $20 million for that pitcher. Like, it wouldn't kill you. But combine that with his age, he'll be 31 in May. Kimbrel's not young. He's got some miles on him. Like, on the bright side, no injury history, really. He's been pretty durable throughout his career. But I just have my guard up on a guy who's in his 30s now as a reliever. So there is a price point, as you kind of mentioned. A shorter deal makes some sense. Obviously, the Braves do have some money to spend. How much money is kind of always the big factor right now. You know, they obviously have the money. It's just kind of what they're going to allow Terry McGuirk and Alex Anthopoulos to spend. Kimbrel wouldn't be the guy I would target in a vacuum, but if the other options dry up and you get him for a bargain, then sure, sign me up. I just don't think that's necessarily going to be the scenario that we'll see here. I do think it's more feasible. Like, if you told me this 2 months ago, I would have kind of laugh it off as not really an option. But now that he's just not going to get the big deal, it looks like maybe the Braves are a fallback, and maybe he wants that comfort of, you know, coming back to a home of some sort and just kind of being a contributor on a short-term deal, maybe try to get back on the market again before he's too old to get back on the market again. So there is value to that, taking a 2 or 3 year deal, still being 32 when you hit the market again versus 34, 35. That can be helpful for you, but it's going to take that for me to be okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, and it doesn't hurt that if Kimbrel came back, he would be like treated like a king by fans. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's
all the fans are all aboard. And even when it was big money, there was a lot of fans asking us and telling us they wanted Kimbrel. And you know why. I mean, when he was in Atlanta, he was the best reliever in baseball. You know, he was that again 2 years ago. He is excellent. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, my skepticism is not really Kimbrel-based. It's more he's relievers. Not quite. Yeah, it's relievers. It's his age. And he's not quite the same guy that he was when he was with the Braves. You know, he had the year 2 years ago where he was that pitcher again. You know, but with the Braves, for 3 straight seasons, he had an ERA of 1.61 or few or less for the Braves. He had a full season with a 1.01 ERA as a full-time closer. Like, that is outrageous.
Yeah. I want that Kimbrel. Can we get that one?
Yeah, I mean, we're not hating on Kimbrel. Like, he's really good at baseball. I just, for me, reliever, especially one of his age. Like, if Kimbrel was 25, I still wouldn't be like banging the drum and in terms of going to sign him to a huge deal, because relievers scare me, but I'm even more skeptical because he has a lot of mileage and all that fun stuff. So it'd be fun. I mean, the team would obviously be better with Craig Kimbrel on it. No one's saying otherwise. It's just sort of a cost-benefit analysis and the opportunity cost there. Where do you want to spend your money? And if the Braves only have a set number and they use all of that money or most of that money on Craig Kimbrel, could you have improved elsewhere? That's the question.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess the bigger question comes down to the next two guys we're supposed to be talking about. You know, is there a realistic chance that the Braves could get Manny Machado and Bryce Harper? it's
well,
funny.
Not and. We should say or. Well, it's not going to be and.
Yeah, you're right. It's not.
Just to make sure we were clear about that. It's not going to be and. I promise you that. But
you heard it here first. Brad thinks that we can get Machado and Bryce Harper. Go ahead and send all inquiries to him at BT Roland on Twitter.
Absolutely.
I will say this about the Machado and Harper kind of random chatter. It seems like every day there's three or four teams that are, quote, checking in on him or possibly meeting with either one of these guys. I think there's 0% chance that Manny Machado is coming to the Braves. Just because, like, he seems enamored. Like, the teams he's been, like, rumored to talk to or rumored to want to go to are these big market teams. He's either looking for a big market or a big deal, and I don't think that the Braves are willing to do either one of those. And the Braves do have Dansby Swanson, and while we can all have our skepticism about Dansby's bat, and you know and he's earned a certain level of criticism of that, he's still a very good defensive player, and putting Machado at shortstop defensively, there's some bad. Real... Yeah, he wasn't particularly good there, and you can kind of maybe him and Hahn say he was a little bit better with the Dodgers defensively, and this is the same guy that was kind of like an all-world defensive third baseman, so maybe it could translate, and he just needs some time to adjust over there. That's fine, but the level of upgrade you get from Dansby to Machado, you have to wonder if that's how you should best spend your money. But all that said, if between the two, I think that it's more likely it would be Bryce Harper. It requires some moving parts involving probably moving Ender and Ciarte, so that way Acuña would be in center field, and then you play Marquez in right field, and then you have Bryce in left. Obviously, the money is the biggest concern, simply because Harper, it seems like at this point, is going to get the bigger of the two deals between Harper and Machado, I think. I mean, it's kind of hard to gauge anything right now. I think Machado probably ends up with the White Sox just because they seem to be wanting to throw all the money at him. And Harper kind of would be an interesting piece here. Some Braves fans have been very adamant about they don't want him because they think he's a punk, or they don't think he's particularly good, or that his batting average is low, and I think that's pretty silly. But, you know, again, that type of deal, if it were to happen, would probably have to be some weird front-loaded deal with an opt-out. So it ends up kind of working out like a short-term deal, but, you know, he signs a contract that's, you know, however many years, how for how long.
A short-term deal with none of the long-term benefit and all of the risk, which is not what you want. You opt-outs, Anthopoulos is kind of famously against them. He did not go as far as to say that he refuses to give an opt-out, but he does not. He's never given one. And he definitely does not like them. He's on the record as saying that. So just as some backdrop there, because you get why, because, you know, again, the team has all the risk with the opt-outs like that, and the player doesn't have any risk.
Agreed. And again, that's why I think the only way it would make sense is if it was front-loaded and, like, those last few years were, like, for not a ton of money. One thing to consider with, like, a long-term deal for either one of these guys that folks kind of have to start thinking about is – arbitration's not getting any cheaper. I mean, Mookie Betts just got $20 million in arbitration in his second year. Arenado just got $26 million. And sooner or later, you're going to want to figure out what you're going to do with Ronald Acuña and Ozzie Albies and all these other guys that are coming up. And if you want to have any hope...
Pay them. Ronald Acuña is what's going to happen.
Well, and it should happen. But at the same time, like, you know, if you lock up a bunch of money on one of these big guys that you're just wondering why the Braves aren't signing, that could be an overriding factor. That's why they might be targeting short-term deals. Because they know that they want to lock up Ronald Acuña. They know they would want to, you know, maybe lock up Ian Fulte or, you know, Ozzie Albies, guys like that. If you know you want to do that, you have to kind of have the money to do that, and you have to plan for it. But again, I don't think either one of those is super likely. But of the two, I would say that, you know, if something weird were to happen and all of a sudden the Braves were to, you know, land one of those big guys, I guess it would be Bryce. But again, I wouldn't see either one of them as likely.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to leave that for now. I mean, I feel like we talked about it a lot, and we kind of said what we're going to say. Obviously, the Braves would be better with either one of those guys on board at a price point that makes sense, then sure. And if not, I think it's definitely still unlikely. But until they sign somewhere, and they still haven't signed anywhere as of this podcast at 10:01 p.m. on Monday night, you know, until the door is closed, I guess we have to always keep it in mind. But
I'm gonna start refreshing Twitter, because that's usually the cue for when something.
Yeah, I'm on TweetDeck, and I'm sure something's gonna break either during or after this podcast is up, and then I have to travel the next 3 days, so it's gonna be really, really, really bad timing. And speaking of that, JT Realmuto is the guy we've discussed
Seamless.
Probably more than anyone this entire offseason. No huge update. The last thing that I saw was Joe Fusaro saying that there were five teams in it, and it's the Padres, the Reds, the Dodgers, the Rays, and the Braves. That's not anything surprising. You've heard some stuff out there about, you know, Ian Anderson's the guy they want, and all. There's little tidbits here and there about Realmuto. We're all in this holding pattern, and kind of everyone agrees the Braves are one of the favorites. But it's February. I mean, it's kind of weird. I mean, the clock is ticking a little bit. I think it's a little bit overstated that how late it is in the off season, because games don't start for a while longer, and you often see some moves happening even after guys report to spring training. But Realmuto is still a member of the Marlins at this point in time. I think they're going to trade him at some point, but for now, the Braves are just a leader. Do you have any new thoughts on Realmuto? Because I'm kind of just out of thoughts, honestly.
So I don't think that the Dodgers are going to – I think if the Dodgers wanted to deal for Realmuto, like, or had a strong inclination to do so, they would have already. They have the prospects to do it. I don't understand – and the Rays' interest I do understand, although – sending long-term assets like the prospects they have, and their farm system is legitimately great. And if they have the prospects to go get them if they want to. The way that their finances work, though, I don't understand how they would want to trade like real prospects, which is what the Marlins are going to want, because they need those guys to be like competitive for the long term in order to get a catcher for 2 years who has his own warts. I mean, like, he's not a particularly great framer and things like that. I question whether or not that interest. I mean, I think that anyone's going to be interested in JT Realmuto. I just don't know if the Rays are going to be willing to pull the trigger, given how they run things. What's more puzzling to me is the Padres and the Reds stuff, because I don't see a world where the Reds are competitive over the next 2 years. I just don't. They made some improvements, kind of, this offseason, and they brought Yasiel Puig in. They have Alex Wood. And, you know, they made a couple other upgrades, but, like, they talked about making this big splash in the offseason, and they kind of haven't done that. And they that's a roster that has its own problems. And a lot of their prospects, like, you know, Nick Senzel and Hunter Green and all those guys are legitimately good prospects, but I don't see how that they can compete in that division over the next 2 years, and I don't think there's any world where JT Realmuto would extend there. The Padres, I could maybe see a world where he would extend there if he really believed that the young core, I mean, plus living in San Diego is, like, one of the best places in the world. It's constantly 70 degrees and, you know, beautiful and on the ocean and all that stuff. But the Padres is another team where they've been kind of rumored they were going to be talking to the Marlins, and another team that has the farm system to do it if they wanted to really pony up and throw a bunch of prospects at them. But a lot of their prospects that they have are far away. I mean, they, again, another really good farm system that's really deep, and they should be a pretty good team, but maybe it might be 2021. When that happens, just because they've drafted a lot of high school guys and they have a lot of young international talent that's going to take a little bit of time to get through the minors and get good again. Would Realmuto extend there? Maybe. Again, it's kind of, that's the thing. I just don't know why they would acquire a short-term asset like Realmuto for a couple years when that's not necessarily when I think their window is. So, I mean, I'll say what I've been saying for a while is I think the Braves are the favorite. I think that they have the best offer on the table. I think the Marlins are just taking their sweet time, hoping that someone gets desperate and we'll make a deal for them so they don't have to deal with the Braves, because for whatever reason, they don't want to deal with the Braves, but they don't want to, what they've done the last few deals now is possibly turn down better offers for, because of either mistakes or because they just didn't want to deal with a division rival, or they just didn't want to deal with a specific team for whatever reason. I wouldn't be surprised if there was an offer on the table that had Ian Anderson or Austin Riley in it. With a couple other decent prospects in there, the Braves would be willing to pull the trigger on that. But I just don't think that the Braves are budging just because there's been other teams mentioned. You know, the Braves have made their offer, and now the Marlins are just trying to feel things out and try to get other teams involved.
For sure, it's about value. I mean, Anthopoulos knows that either he has the best offer or a competitive offer at the very, very least. So, rightly, they'll set sort of a price point that they're okay with, and, you know, it's kind of who blinks first. But honestly, between the two teams, the Marlins have more desperation than the Braves do. It's just kind of the reality. They have to trade him. If they don't trade him, they're out of their minds, because they're not anywhere close to doing anything, and he's going to leave, and he doesn't want to sign an extension and all this stuff. Like, they have to maximize him now. They probably should have traded him already, to be honest with you. Probably should have traded him last year during the season. Whereas the Braves, you know, they have a catcher tandem of Flowers and McCann that's acceptable. Like, it's not anything sexy or great, but it's fine. This is a team that could make the playoffs right now. As I said last time on the podcast, I wouldn't pick the Braves to make the playoffs right now today, but they certainly could. Obviously, we were wrong about them last year. Everyone was wrong about them last year. So
it's far more likely preseason 2019 for them to make the playoffs than it was 2018. I mean, like, the thing about the division this year is it's better, which kind of makes those kind of that division record that the Braves kind of feasted on last year less likely. But, I mean, it's not like Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna, like that extra year for them, they're not getting older. This is like the time where they're figuring things out, and they could actually be better. The rotation could be better. The bullpen could be better. I mean, I would probably pick the Braves, honestly, but I understand that, like, there's like probably a three-way race in my mind anyways to, like, as rosters are currently constructed as to, like, who could come out of the NL East. And that's, you know, like, the Braves don't have to make this deal. If they make this deal, they're probably the favorite in the division. By most accounts, I would imagine, just because the offense becomes that much better.
Yeah, if they don't have to give up anything of present, which they're not going to do. So, yeah, I would assume that, you know, they may not be the overwhelming favorite. I think they would be closer to the favorite, if not the favorite, if they had Real Muto, considering just the upgrade there. I think it's probably like a 2-3-1 upgrade, and that's a big swing.
Yeah, and that's like, but at the same time, if the Braves don't make this deal, it doesn't sink their season. It just doesn't.
No. See,
you know, like it's not one of those, like, if they don't make this move, they can't win the division, because, and that's what the Braves should be thinking about, is, you know, like, is this is the price we're willing to pay. If it was something like, if we had this one player that wins us the division, maybe that's different, and that maybe factors into your calculus differently.
Or the World Series. I mean, it's the same, which is kind of the same thing, honestly, because once you get in the playoffs for anyone in Major League Baseball, within reason, you have a chance. But yeah, I don't think that, I'm sure Braves fans will be mad that I'm saying this, I don't think that the Braves with Real Muto are a top five World Series contender. That's just me. It's certainly possible that they could be that if everything went right again. You know, last year, not everything, but most stuff went right in 2018. If the stars align like that again, and then you throw in an all-star caliber catcher like Real Muto, plus Donaldson, like being Donaldson, capital letters, then sure, maybe you're a World Series contender. But I do think the gap between Real Muto and what they have now is big enough to where I wouldn't be hemming and hawing about picking them to make the playoffs anymore. If they had Real Muto, I'd probably have had them in the playoffs. That's a big step. I mean, it's a meaningful one. It makes you money in the playoffs as well. You have that postseason revenue kind of pay for itself. There's all kinds of stuff that you have to factor in when making the playoffs. And so it's a big deal. We know how good he is. I mean, we're on record as saying catcher isn't necessarily the spot, but he's the only guy available right now in trade in the whole league that's just, like, everyone knows he's available, that's an all-star. Like, he's the only one that's like that right now.
Yeah. And this is not how I envisioned the trade market going. I honestly thought it was going to be there more team, players available, teams involved, and it's just everyone's just kind of locked up their guys, except for the Marlins, who, you know, if they're not nailed down to the floor, they're willing to trade them. Except for Real Muto, who is trying to get out the door as, you know, as best he can, and the Marlins could very easily find a way to mess this up. The offer that the Reds were talking about, where it's like Tucker Barnhart and Jonathan India to get to get JT Real Muto, if the Marlins accepted that, the PR disaster, because all of a sudden you'd hear all these other offers that the other teams were making and that were probably twice as good as that by a good margin. There's a good chance that if the Braves don't get JT Real Muto, it's because the Marlins probably screwed up, and that's kind of a shame.
Yeah, that sounds about right. All right, we could probably leave it there on Real Muto. We've done plenty on him in the last, you know, 4 months. It's been a long time. Okay, let's talk about some prospects, Eric, because since last time you and I talked, we've not gone over our prospect list, the top 30 on Talking Chop. If you somehow missed that, it's been a couple weeks now. Go read them. It's very, very important that you go click on those and read them and sort of devour them. We're going to come back to that in a second to talk about your picks along with all of our staff. But there's been a bunch of prospect lists that have come out in the last week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah, there's been a bunch.
Four of them that I made notes of. Baseball America, Baseball Prospectus, Keith Law of ESPN, and MLB Pipeline all kind of came out. We're not going to go through all those today, but has anything jumped out to you in terms of comparing your list to some of the other national consensus lists? Because, I mean, obviously stuff's going to be different in between everyone's ranking, because it's prospect rankings. They're not going to be consensus on everything. But anything jump out to you as like a theme that you've seen around the internet in terms of the Braves prospects and how they're being ranked right now?
Well, I will say shout out to the fine gentlemen and ladies. I assume that there's ladies involved in this process as well. To Mike Soroka is their number one prospect over at MLB Pipeline. You know, this probably this seems very likely to be the last chance that he's going to get ranked at all. He's going to be involved with the major league team likely before midseason, even if he doesn't make that last rotation spot or anything like that. But it comes down to there between Baseball America, Baseball Prospectus, Keith Law, and MLB Pipeline, there were four different players that were number one. Austin Riley was for Baseball America. Ian Anderson was for Baseball Prospectus. Kyle Wright was for Keith Law, and Soroka was for Pipeline. And all that tells you is what we talked about in our list is that we honestly feel like there are probably eight, maybe nine guys who you can shuffle all around. Maybe there's some sub tiers there where, you know, like maybe a Bryce Wilson wouldn't be in contention for like a top three or top four spot. But those eight or nine guys, you can kind of shuffle them all around, and there's real justifications based on, you know, MLB readiness and, you know, stuff versus, you know, kind of projectability versus kind of real world value right now. There's a lot of things that you could hone in on and would give you very different lists regardless. For us, there's, again, and there was a lot of that even just with our list. We were dealing with, let's see, I think it was six people voting this year with their own prospect rankings, and rankings were all over the place. It was really close at the top. Between Soroka and Ian Anderson, if one person had switched, it would have probably ended up with Ian Anderson at number one. It was really, really close. And I don't have anything that jumps out in terms of, you know, what in God's name are they thinking putting that guy there or that guy there, because you're going to have people who are going to believe in Drew Waters' projectability and think that his bat's going to play more than Christian Pache. And you're going to have people who think that Christian Pache's like pure athleticism and like real world seeing and plus defense, it makes him a better player. And you see the Drew Waters versus Christian Pache thing, you know, flip flop all the time. And I understand it. It's a hard, you're having to make bets that are kind of hard to fault either way, because there's real reasons for it. And that's kind of what I say it was a problem, because ultimately we came up with a list that I'm happy with. And at the very least, we came up with the right guys kind of in that top 10 area, that these are the guys that are kind of in contention for those top spots. And, you know, if you have personal preferences or certain things that you look for, whether it be, you know, maybe you don't value position, you value position players more than pitchers and things like that, you could move Riley up, you could move Pache up, you could move Waters up, and vice versa. I want to say it was a tough list, but it was more of a list where the order of probably the top eight or nine guys that I don't have confidence in saying I do think that guy is two spots better than the other guy, because, again, they're all kind of in the same tier for us.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. Obviously, this is something that I don't do all the time. You know, I do follow these guys closer than most people, but I'm not I'm definitely not a scout. I'm not a prospect ranker, someone who is an expert by any means. I have some opinions, but I'm going to defer to people like you that watch these guys a lot more than I do in general. But I mean, I didn't really have too many hot takes on what I saw. I mean, I think Pache is like being all over the place is not surprising to me. There's people that are really high on him. There's people that are not so high on him. And I think that's just the way that his profile is. Like, as someone who doesn't have a ton of power, like, you kind of have to like that kind of player or you're not going to like him. Riley, go ahead.
I'll say with Pache, it's not so much like, because he hit for more power last year. Like
He did. More power.
And he showed a step forward, so that maybe that isn't a reason to knock him, right? And, like, if you see the guy, you realize, like, he's not like a rail thin guy or a guy that you can't think that he's not strong enough to get the ball over the fence. The bigger problem is just his hit tool in general and his ability to get on base, because, one, his ability to translate his very real plus-to-plus-plus speed, translating that to stolen bases didn't really happen last year, and he's a guy that doesn't walk a lot. And if you combine with the weird power profile issues that did improve but weren't particularly great, and the fact that you don't draw walks, it's whether or not his bat is going to be an impact one. I think everyone agrees that at the very least he's a plus defender, if not more than that, right now. And I mean, he makes plays in the outfield look easy. It's just whether or not that his athletic gifts are going to translate to offensive performance, simply because his bat in general combined with his plate discipline. I mean, right now, if he was in the major leagues, I mean, he might have a sub 300 OBP, and that's not going to work. He's going to have to learn to, you know, lay off pitches. And, you know, in the minors right now, what he can do is, you know, he can hit rollers, he can pull rollers to the left side and he can beat them out because he's so fast. But he's going to have to drive the ball more. But he's also a guy that you see those athletic gifts and you're like, man, if he just figures it out and he just kind of learns how to be a better hitter, like this is a guy that could be a perennial all-star. And there are people who are like, I think that he can do it, and you see the improvements. And there are other people who are like, I think there's a real limit to what he's going to be offensively, even as good as he is defensively. And I can't fault anyone either way, because there have been plenty of people who have been super athletically gifted who ended up not being particularly good baseball players, and just because raw athleticism doesn't always translate. But there's also been plenty of guys where, like, they had a couple years where they hadn't quite figured out, and then they put the work in and they made the adjustments, and then they turned into, some of the better players that we see on the field right now. So it's a tough, again, with Pache, I have no problems if he was at the back end of a top 100 or if he's higher up. But it's pretty clear as to what people are placing their bets on in that case.
Yeah, I totally get why. He's just kind of it's kind of easy to see why people are split on him. Riley's been somebody who has always been kind of polarizing. Like, for instance, Keith Law ranking him in the top 100 for the first time. He's kind of been notoriously low on Riley. I've been a little bit lower on Riley in general as well. But, like, he has a split of as high as 22 for Baseball America, and Law has him at 87. That's a pretty wide range. Not insane, but pretty wide. And obviously we have him at 4. I think all of those are within reason. I think it's the same sort of thing. Like, I didn't see anything particularly crazy on any of these lists. I think the one guy and it kind of goes along with what you guys are as well. Bryce Wilson's a little bit, there's some splits on him. I know we're not super high on him as a collective. I don't know how you shake out versus the overall TC ranking on Bryce, but I was surprised to see him like in a couple of like top 60s. That surprised me just a little bit.
He is a guy that, another guy that I understand, it all comes down to the secondaries for him, because his fastball is very good. And I mean, you saw when he made his major league debut against the Pirates. I mean, he made that start look easy. But then when he shifted to the bullpen, he didn't do particularly well. But there are some people who honestly think that his secondaries are far enough behind that his future may end up being in the bullpen. And if you think he's a reliever, then obviously you can't make him into like a top 40, top 50 prospect. But if you think that he can improve his changeup and his breaking ball gets better, I mean, he's a guy that can hold 97 miles an hour into the ninth inning. I've seen him do it. And that's not something that you necessarily find growing on trees. And he's also a guy that has, like, since he's been drafted, he went from, in Keith Law's eyes, he was a reliever, and that his delivery was funky and that he just didn't think he was going to do it. And then within just a series of adjustments of, kind of his windup and kind of his delivery and how he attacked hitters, now Keith Law has him as like a borderline top 50 prospect in baseball. You have to believe in those sorts of adjustments being made, because he's probably not a great starting pitcher right now, but he's super young. I mean, he started this season at high A and he made it to the major leagues this year, which is crazy. And people will kind of gauge what they saw in the major leagues is kind of how they feel about him, whether or not you really thought that Pittsburgh start was, kind of like, wow, he could really be something special. And he very well could be. Or if you saw the guy who didn't see a lot of time in the major leagues after that start and kind of faltered a little bit in that relief role, then maybe you're like, you wonder what those secondary pitches are and whether or not he'll be able to get major league hitters out. It's a tough decision to be made. He is a guy that will stay polarizing until he has like 2 or 3 years in the major leagues doing whatever he ends up doing. But I like him a lot. I think I personally had him at like 8. And it's not necessarily being lower on him. It's just kind of, again, within those tiers, what risks are more palatable than others for some of our guys. And the risks with Bryce is that he just doesn't have that, a particularly good secondary pitches to pitch off that fastball of his. That will make you wonder if he's a guy that can like be a starter for the long term. Not that he won't be a reliable major leaguer. I mean, he's already been in the major leagues, and I think he is a major leaguer. But are you really going to rank him over a guy like a Kyle Wright, who has really good stuff and has more developed secondaries, or a guy like Tukey, who has a lightning fastball and a curveball that gives me heart palpitations? I mean, there are reasons why you might rank him above them in terms of like whether it be command or, kind of what you think they would do in the major leagues right now. But that's kind of where he is right now. It's just that there's a lot of major league grade talent, or that's close to it, or there's a lot of really high ceiling talent. And that just kind of puts him just at that, like, kind of the edge of that first tier. which again I have no problems with, and it doesn't necessarily mean he's going to end up being, might not end up being the best of all of them.
Yeah, I mean it's in play to be sure. Two more things I wanted to ask you. One, I assume that MLB Pipeline is your favorite outlet now because they have Soroka at number one on the Braves list.
they certainly have my favorite prospect rankings. But Baseball America has my heart.
I know. I'm just, yeah. It's funny. And by the way, Soroka was what, top 25 for Baseball America? They were actually really high on the Braves in general. They had four in their top 40.
Yeah, it was funny once I saw Pipeline's list, I was like, I don't think I would have ever bet that that was going to happen, is that they were going to be highest on Soroka, but here we are. But I mean, they all do a lot of really good work, and everyone gets different information and sees guys on different days. And it makes me happy that with the way in which information is being disseminated now, that it feels like now for a little while, especially when these guys are in the low minors, is that everyone was getting information from different places, and some of that information just was not good. And now it feels like that kind of, as these guys have risen through the system, that we're kind of talking about the same eight or nine guys. People can have their personal preferences and all that stuff, but again, you kind of see these guys being grouped in the generally the same areas, and that makes me happy in the sense that, you know, it feels like that, one, we've been fairly correct in how we've been looking at guys all along, but at the same time that the information that's out there is kind of similar to what we've been seeing.
Yeah, and that's probably a good way to put that as well. I mean, one thing I wanted to ask you then, aside from just, we could parse all of his lists, but there's not really a reason. As you mentioned, they're kind of the same eight or nine guys in various orders. I guess there's two more things. One thing was that Law did a organizational ranking and had the Braves at number three overall behind the Padres and the Rays. Number one, that's obviously just something to ask you about in general. But number two, it's pretty impressive, at least to me as an outsider in this prospect game, that the Braves would still have a top three class after losing Acuna and winning the NL East last year. It's kind of crazy to talk about how good the system still is, even with obviously a couple of high-profile graduations recently with Acuna and Albies, et cetera, and, of course, a good major league team on top of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Max Fried graduated too, so that's another guy who was a top 10 guy for us at various points, and he's no longer prospect eligible. What's crazier is, I mean, the Padres and the Rays systems are legitimately very good. A name you're going to have to go ahead and pencil in now if you're following prospects at all is Wander Franco for the Rays. That kid is something special, and like that's Vladimir Guerrero Jr., he's the king of the prospect rankings until he graduates and the Blue Jays figure out that they're a much better team once they call him up. But Wander Franco is going to be the next guy. I'm pretty sure he's going to be the top prospect in baseball sooner rather than later. And, you know, the Padres have just this depth of pitching and precision prospects, for that matter, led by Fernando Tatis Jr. that, I mean, they deserve the one and two slots. But what's crazier to me is that the Braves, you know, with the graduations, you know, you would expect them to slip a little bit, but not having a first round pick is the big deal.
Yeah, no first rounder, no Acuna, all these graduations. Like, this is kind of crazy, man.
They have a top 10 pick that they did not sign, which means in the next draft they're going to get a top 10 pick.
And their own pick.
Plus their own pick, which I suspect and kind of hope that they spend on some position players just simply for need. I can't see a world where another starting pitching prospect is going to have an opportunity anytime in the next decade at this point. But, you know, it's funny that how it's worked. I mean, we're going to see some graduations. We're pretty sure that Mike Soroka is going to graduate. It's very likely that Tukey will graduate. There's a couple other guys, maybe a Gohara or a Kyle Wright, depending on what happens. Those guys graduate. But we can see at midseason or at the end of the season, this top 10, top 15 is still going to be a really good top 10 or top 15 and guys that we really like. So it's, and plus we're going to have two draft picks, obviously no international signings, but you know, the system's not going to like just after 2019, just like, you know, turn into nothing. I mean, it all comes down to whether or not what trades happen, if at all, but you know, that's a bigger question. It's the kind of, if they make a trade for Real Muto or someone else, who do they lose there? But overall, I mean, the system, they might not be the best in baseball anymore, and I think it's fair to say that they're not at this point. But, I mean, like, to say that this system couldn't be a top 10 system for the next few years, I think it's entirely possible.
Yeah, and that's, again, pretty crazy and pretty impressive on the part of the Braves. All right, last question before I let you get out of here. On this fine Monday evening, if you had to pick someone that is outside that top 9 or 10 tier that will be that could jump in, that could sort of jump into it during the season or by the end of the season, like maybe sort of a sleeper of sort, however you want to put that, who is your guy that can make the leap into being a top 10 guy for the Braves?
So I'm going to give you a pitcher and a hitter. For a pitcher,
I love that.
Yeah, I'm going to say Freddie Tarnock. This is a kid that is a very raw as a pitcher, and he started off in the bullpen for Rome, and then he transitioned to a starter. Good breaking ball, really live upper 90s fastball. Has kind of, again, he's a raw prospect. Needs to learn how to pitch and kind of command his pitches better. But in terms of raw stuff, he's a guy that could jump into top 100s in a hurry. Another guy that I really like, too, and we've all kind of liked him for a while, is a late-round pick the Braves made in C.J. Alexander. His brother, Blaze Alexander, I think was selected by the Marlins like early in this draft, and he was selected out of a junior college, and all this dude does is hit. And while he didn't show power this year necessarily, in terms of like home runs anyway, he has it. And all you need to know is that not only has he hit everywhere he's been, and he made the jump all the way to high A this year in his draft year, but he also he got the non-roster invite to spring training this year, which usually is reserved for kind of those top, those top three or four round picks, give those guys that they are quote unquote highly regarded a chance to look at big league camp. And he was invited this year. And as a third base prospect, especially if he shows some power, he's a guy that maybe makes Austin Riley a little bit more expendable in the sense that he's, it's another guy in your system that, worst case scenario, if you really need a third baseman, he's a guy that you can at least believe could do something. And so if we're picking two guys, those would be my two picks. I mean, the guy can hit, and if he starts to show some actual power, and coming off a long college season and then, putting on the show that he did in his draft year, we're expecting to see some big things.
So there you have it, folks. If you're trying to find, if you have some sort of weird betting pool on good Braves prospects,
my track record is pretty good on this too.
You normally nail these. In my recollection, we do this every year or so, and usually are pretty ahead of the game on this stuff. So just file that away, Braves fans. That's all I'll say about that. I wanted to ask you about Contreras because I think he's easily the player that is the least discussed of all the top 8 or 9 guys. And he's now been on a couple of these lists, not all of them. He's the one guy who sort of popped up on one or two of these prospect lists, but not all of them. We had him collectively at number 8 overall. So I guess enlighten the people on him. I know this is not like a deep dive Braves prospect podcast usually. So please share some info on Contreras and like, what does he project as? Cause I know that's sort of a tricky position as well when trying to evaluate that kind of player.
Yeah, he has a very good arm and he has good feet, so like he moves quickly behind the plate. Doesn't always make the best decisions in terms of when he's blocking pitches and all that stuff. And he's still learning how to call games because he's young, but he's Wilson Contreras of the Cubs' brother. He's a really athletic guy behind the plate. I think that he'll end up being a above average defender, and I think that everyone I've talked to is that he's improving each and every day at like calling games and like learning his craft. I don't know if he's a guy that's going to move super fast because catchers, I don't think necessarily should. If you move a catcher really fast and then you all of a sudden have him call in major league games, that's a problem. I do respect the amount of reps that are required to like learn how to call games and call them well and learn how to frame and all that other stuff. But he's a guy at the plate with pop. He will draw walks. He will, he moves surprisingly well. I mean, he's not going to be like, a 20 base stealer or anything like that, but he doesn't run like a catcher. And he's, a guy that can, spray the ball all fields. And for a guy that has like a real bat that will probably be average more than power, I would imagine. And a guy that feels like he can stick behind the plate, right now he's kind of there's like the tier of like three catchers, or I would say three or four catchers that are like league wide that are kind of like good catching prospects that might stick in the major leagues. He's kind of on the outside right now just because he only just got to high A this year, but he's a guy that I like how he seems to be involved. He wants to be involved in every play in the game. And as a catcher, when like you have to kind of react really quickly to like chances to pick off guys or like, make throws that, when a guy decides to steal or whenever you have to like jump off the back of the plate and go get a foul ball and things like that. All those quick twitch reactions that I look for in catchers, I saw in my looks of him. Again, not everything's perfect, still very young and still a work in progress into like doing all those things well. But in terms of like, how involved he is wanting to be in the game and being a part of this, like the overall strategy of winning games. Like that's a guy that we're high on. Others are as well. And I think that he'll end up being really good.
That sounds about right. Obviously, again, I've not seen these guys as much as you have, but just an interesting name. Cause I think he, at least for me and my perception, is the one guy who's kind of flying under the radar, and part of that's position. And part of that's probably, proximity to the majors, et cetera. So just someone to keep in mind. All right. That's probably enough, I think, unless you have something that you just want to desperately share, Eric, on this fine Monday. And I know positively that in the next hour or so after I post this podcast, there will be a trade. And I'm trying to reverse jinx that to some degree, but I also don't want it to happen because, as I mentioned before, I have 3 days of work travel. So if the Braves could just like hold on until after the NBA trade deadline on Thursday, that'd be great for me.
I mean, nothing crazy. We get the prospect list done, so make sure you guys go read that. I'm actually doing some baseball card stuff at this point in time. Trying to do an article series about like my re-entry into that hobby. Spoiler alert: it's quite expensive, as I'm finding out, but it's also a lot of fun. So I should have some sort of update post that will be happening maybe in the next week, maybe two, depending on how some things go and, what I can get put together. But other than that, we're kind of just getting ready for, minor league roster previews, which will go up once the actual rosters are announced. And we're going to be kind of looking at spring training as to who's going to make the squad and who's not. And that's just right around the corner. It's less than 2 weeks until we start seeing, guys, in workouts and actually doing stuff. So, right now it's just kind of a little bit of a holding pattern, waiting to see if the Braves are going to make any other moves and, kind of seeing who we're going to have to work with on the minor league side once, the Braves break camp.
Yep, and, there's a lot going on. Follow Eric, follow me if you want mostly NBA talk, but there's some Brave stuff in there every once in a while. And when the season starts, I usually ramp it up a little bit. But, I try to at least weigh in every once in a while, but hopefully you can, like, survive the Hawks tweets. I do cover the Hawks pretty earnestly, and probably every day or so, Eric asked me some ridiculous question about the Hawks making the playoffs. So that's
it's happening. You heard it here first. Hilarious if it happens.
Listen, they won tonight. They've been playing well, but we've gone full circle at this point. Please follow Eric. Please follow the site. Please follow the prospect content and the minor league content. Be ramping up in the future. Obviously, spring training is almost here, man. We're like within 2 weeks of
pitchers and catchers support. Yep. Like trucks are already leaving stadiums right now to head down.
That is, that's outrageous considering the Super Bowl was yesterday. But yeah, we're ready to go, I guess. As ready as we're going to be, I suppose. But I still think something's going to happen between now and spring training, really firing up on all cylinders. But if it doesn't happen, the Braves will have this roster and we'll have plenty to talk about. So thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And we'll do it again very soon.